VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to The Ruck. We asked today if this is the first podcast of the post-Dylan Hartley era. We also asked today of Brad Shields, is he really the man to save England? And because we are not scared to ask the tough questions, we ask Mark Evans, when do we all get to go and stay with him in Cornwall? So yes, I'm joined again by Mark Evans. Hello, Mark.
How you doing?
Last time Mark was on The Ruck, we spent so long on his intro that we didn't have any time for conversation. In short, he is the former boss of Saracens, Harlequins and Melbourne Storm. And of late, more significantly, he played a crucial role in the stadium for Cornwall, which finally got the green light last week for funding. So it's all Cornish Pirates. Here we go now. Mark, that's a brilliant week for you last week. Congratulations. That's fantastic, no?
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, a long, long road, but did very, very satisfying in the end. And hopefully we can get the damn thing built now.
So the thing gets built. How long till Cornish Pirates genuinely, possibly, could challenge for the Premiership? Because that's really the question.
I mean, that's all down to a second phase of investment. I mean, this is possibly the way they should have done it, this way around. You know, build the facility and then invest in the team. I mean, I've never known a club do it. Renting a stadium, I think everyone knows now, that model. Not many models do work, but that one certainly doesn't.
So the Pirates have actually done quite well to come along later, seeing how many mistakes so many other people have made by losing all this money and decided to do it smart.
Well, they've lost a fair bit too, but to be fair, the gap's big now. So who knows, in 2 or 3 years' time, when maybe they'll be in and they'll have a look at it, who knows what the system will look like now. I don't think anybody's entirely sure.
Well, good to have you back. And will you be happy to do the rest of the podcast in your Cornish accent?
I'd be happy, but that's more Somerset, isn't it?
Okay, nice.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Also, a popular return for recent recruit Chris Jones of the Sunday Times and numerous other titles. Who we worked out last time, Chris, did we not agree that you were approaching your fifth decade as a rugby writer?
Cool. I certainly was. I told you, that push chair that was put on the side of the pitch at the Nazareth House Sevens in Cardiff.
It used to be great, didn't it?
It was fantastic, actually. Yeah, and the first tournament I did, a bloke's life had to be saved by a watching nurse who pulled out a pen and flipped the bloke's tongue back out of his throat. It was marvellous. Easy intro, actually, for the piece.
But we were discussing this earlier. You have been doing the job for so long that you actually saw Mark Evans next to you playing.
Playing.
Well,
quite literally playing.
How deeply disappointing for you.
I know, it was when talking about massive stadiums, it's when Mark got all the ideas for these new stadium by playing it in North London, in Bramley Lane, where there was a rabbit hutch of a stand, Mark?
It was a good game for rabbits, wasn't it?
From Little Acorns, Chris. From Little Acorns.
Absolutely. If only you could have done something. Especially keeping the dog fouling off the pitch was another major factor, wasn't it?
Yeah, a little bit of a myth, that one. But yes, fair.
Okay.
Fair comment.
Now, the sharper eared among you will already recognise that this does not sound much like the women's rugby special pod that we promised last week. Neither was this podcast made available as per weekly on a Monday evening. That is largely due to health issues, Brexit and the royal baby.
Mm.
The world, it seemed, plotted against us yesterday. But as the great Greek philosopher Steve Jones once said, if you can't pod on a Monday, well, just do it on a Tuesday instead. For this week now, we just had the Champions Cup semi-finals. I was in Dublin. I've seen Leinster beat Exeter Saracens and Scarlets now, and they are a phenomenal force. Anyone disagree?
But are they? Is this been an absolutely vintage Champions Cup, do you feel?
I like it. So you're just saying that the opposition have been rubbish?
Well, no, I just don't think...
Average.
If you're going to say, are Leinster one of the great teams to have gotten to a final, then... Yeah, they might turn out to be a very, very good team. But when you look at some of the great teams that have won this competition. Yeah, I know you can only beat. I know you're going to say you can only beat what's in front of you. Fine, but
and they haven't even won a final yet, so we're jumping ahead of ourselves. But they're very strong
favourites.
But if a team
like Racing, who are showing us a brand new way of playing rugby, which is you win a game in 10 minutes and then spend another 70 minutes trying not to play rugby and just running around being negative, then, yeah, fine, it's a very interesting Champions Cup. Look, I love European Cup rugby. Yeah, I loved it when it was Heineken, actually.
No, but do you think it's been a slightly lower standard competition this year, as Chris seems to be suggesting?
I'm not sure. I think Leinster are a really very, very good team.
We can say that Saracens and Claremont, who have been the standout teams for the last two or three years, have both had average years, so that's sort of taken away.
But they've also had a shed load of injuries, haven't they? I mean, you look at those two teams. You want an example of two teams who have been absolutely decimated, then you've got them, haven't you, Mark? It's just been very difficult.
That's taken two of the strongest teams out of contention to a degree. And one of the other really strong teams, Montpellier, didn't really fire, and I think they'd probably have to win the top 14 first before they really turn their full focus onto Europe. Yeah. And this is a tough thing to say, actually, but the way, and I don't think this is a bad thing, but the way the Aviva Premiership is set up, with 12 really quite strong teams, certainly down to 11th, mitigates against a really dominant European team coming to the fore. I mean, from England. I mean, Exeter are a really good side, and they play in a very similar way to Leinster. Leinster kick a bit more, but when Leinster want to play the way Exeter play, they can play that way too. Mm. Really good in the red zone, you know, great ball retention in the last 10, 15 metres. But Leinster have got so much more, and Leinster have got a lot of depth for the Premiership, but Leinster have got depth for European competitions. And I don't want to make it sound like an apologist for the Premiership. They can rotate players a bit more. I mean, that's a different argument whether you should be doing that for the good of the game. But I think Leinster are a really good side. But I don't think they're definitely going to win the final, because Racing... I think the story of the weekend is the start of the revival of French rugby. We saw a bit of it in the Six Nations. But the starting 15 for Racing were fit with 12 French players. Now, that hasn't happened. That didn't happen in the great Toulon sides. This hasn't happened since Toulouse bestrode Europe, you know, in the early part of this, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, because you're right. Yeah. We're used to the French being the ultimate checkbook.
Yeah, barbarians clubs, type team. And then, not you look, there's 12 French qualified players in the starting 15. Rocco Coco and Dan on the bench, along with Swarzewski. I mean, that is a hell of a squad. I think they might win it if they play the right way, whereas Scarlets, who've played some sensational rugby, and it's been a joy to watch, just never got there. A horrible phrase, isn't it? Terrible cliche. Didn't get their game on the pitch.
Well, they didn't get a chance. Afterwards, we were saying, well, whose fault was it? Or who played badly? Who could you point a finger at? But they just didn't even get a chance to have a go.
I think what's interesting with Leinster, and, you know, he's had a rough time with it, but the stuff that Stuart Lancaster has brought to them in terms of the minute way he looks at preparation, he knew the sort of defensive pattern that Scarlets were going to throw at Leinster. He's seen it before in English rugby. He's now more aware of those stuff. He gets his message over very, very clearly. We've sat through a number of his presentations. He goes into the nth degree. And I think that's helped Leinster, if you like, deal with things better. They are much more of a complete package now. And so I think, you know, as you say, Racing could win this if they play for 60, 70 minutes. But what will happen is that in this time now up to the final, Leinster's fantastic forensic look at what they're going to be facing will be great. So you need to beat that, you need the French to come out with some of that special play that they can do, that Teddy can do off the cuff.
Yeah, and that's, except that's that they've the way. Got the power.
Teddy Thomas.
I mean,
he's like your friend then. First name. I mean, we can do first name in terms of all of these. Right?
Well, yeah.
Please, you're so close.
He's obviously Welsh qualified. But he is a sort of player who, you can expect something that will really catch the Leinster defence out, because he can do things that, you pay big money to watch. Yeah. Or in fact, you pay big money to have him in your team. But, Leinster will come at you and come at you.
Did you see Jordan Lama trying to step his way around about eight players in one go?
I mean, what for goodness sake. I mean, but I think the big difference is both Munster, because no one's talked about, we haven't talked about Munster, but Munster and Schlesley looked to me, seriously underpowered at that level.
Yeah,
And I think that I'm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing, and this is one of the things I suppose I'm not sure I quite like this about the game as it is at the moment. At the very, very highest level, it doesn't really matter how quick or skillful or innovative you might be, because nobody could accuse any of the Scarlets of not being any of those three things. They've been terrific. They just got completely overpowered, but with a real quick line speed and an outside press. And if you haven't got the power then, if a team does that to you, to go through the middle, and they didn't, you've got nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. It's like when Saracens, a couple of years back, when they were at their peak, which they may well return to, teams in the Premiership couldn't do anything. They couldn't go through them, and they couldn't go round them. So then you end up kicking the ball to them, and then you lose the possession battle. And I think Racing's great difference between in the final will be they are as powerful man for man as the Leinster team are, right through the team. I'm not just talking about a couple
so
of
then we'll have to see
guys.
a different Leinster then, because they
or
can't
you'll have
play
two teams playing exactly the same way, and it'll just be a real slugfest and real power game, and who's going to win the collisions. It's going to be I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be
so are you taking a bank loan out then?
I'm an observer because I'm helping with the Newcastle in 2019.
Not another game.
It's just work.
Fingers in pies. How many have you got?
I love the way you've been involved in rugby. Anyone else getting a freebie?
You've been in rugby for a long time. But the prices being charged.
Oh, in hotels.
It's just
terrible.
Look,
how do you do this to rugby? Rugby supporters suffer week in, week out watching the team. Great news, you got to the final. And by the way, you know that mortgage you were going to take out for your son's house and daughter's side, can you actually change it into a few tickets in a hotel?
Yeah, but the good news is that when we go to Newcastle next year, Mark's going to sort out some proper pricing for everyone.
The rugby authorities can't control the hotel prices. And if you take it to unless you want the finals played in London and Paris all the time, it's very, very difficult to control that. And we all know how difficult it is to stop tickets going on the secondary market, because what happens is, people buy tickets way back in the day, hoping their team will get there. If their team doesn't get there, they sell them onto the secondary market. And if it's a really popular game, the prices go sky high. It happens in international rugby as well. Technically, there will come a point soon where you'll be able to do something about that. But at the moment, it's very, very hard to do because, we misprice tickets, don't we? I mean, people will pay £500 to go and watch a game.
Yeah, but I'm
if you've got that sort of income,
I'm satisfied that you'll solve this for next
year. I'll solve it by Newcastle. Yeah, okay.
But listen, can we just hold that thought a sec? Because I don't know. Without meaning to, we've said a couple of interesting things that we need to go back on and rediscuss.
Oh,
seriously, it happened. It did happen. It did happen on this podcast.
Can you play the tape back, please?
Mark, you said that a 12-team Premiership doesn't set an English team up to win Europe. Explain.
Although England have got more players than any other country, even than France,
yeah.
Although France have got a bigger audience in terms of people who follow the game, that allows it to run a national league that only France can do. Nobody else in the world of rugby can run a league in a single country. The market just isn't big enough, or the population isn't big enough. So Wales, Ireland, New Zealand, Australia, you know the drill. To make that league compelling, you have to have an uncertainty of outcome amongst as many of the 12 teams as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that means that the talent is spread more evenly across 12 or 11 or 10 teams
than it is in
four teams of Ireland. Or even, I know Connacht won the Pro
without
Pro
an official NFL draft.
And the market does that to a degree. And you've heard me being quite critical of the way that we're organised in England. But nevertheless, that's one of the good things about it. Whereas, ironically, in a smaller country like Ireland, population 6 million, a big sport now in Ireland. I'm old enough to remember when it wasn't. They are able to direct their playing resources. And there's no doubt about it. Talk to anyone in Ireland, they have concentrated largely on Leinster and Munster.
Yeah.
And partly that's political with players who, less so now, but certainly traditionally, a lot of players from the Republic didn't want to go and play in Ulster for a whole variety.
And Connacht was seen as a
development side.
Mm. Yeah, but so, your point is that they've got they put their resources into fewer teams, and therefore they're stronger.
And therefore they have more depth. They are able to rotate people more.
More control in every way.
And also, to be fair, they focus far more on the. I mean, I've never worked in Ireland, and I'd be really interested to know.
Seriously, we've found somewhere you haven't had a job yet.
How many stadia do they need?
How keen are they in winning the Pro 14? I mean, is that a really big priority? I thought it was really interesting this week. They talked about when we lost to the Scarlets in the semi-final last year, and we learned a lot from that because we tried to go around them and we couldn't. So this year we went through them and that we played them a different way. I also wonder, you know, they were really up for it. Do they get as up for that as they do in a Pro 12 final, even? Because certainly the English clubs...
I've heard them refer to Europe as... Sorry, to the Pro 14 as the secondary competition.
Well, whereas you'd never hear a Premiership side that, would you? I mean, interesting question. Ask most people who play for a Premiership side in England, would you rather win the European Cup or win the Premiership? I think you get a split.
So and when you were boss of Saracens
and Quins... And the same in the top 14.
When you were boss of Saracens and Quins, which did you balance it at all, or did you just try to win everything?
Back in the day with Saracens a long time ago, the European Cup wasn't nearly as big. In fact, the English club didn't play in it for a couple of years, so that it didn't really come up.
Profile-wise, it's changed. You need to win the European Cup now.
And now with the English side in the Premiership... I would say it's pretty close. I think if pushed, people would say, I'd love to win a European Cup. But winning the Premiership's really important. That takes most of your attention. And also, you're battling to qualify next year. You know, you're battling to come top four, you're battling to come top six.
Just go back to this 12-team Premiership. Mm. If you were to redesign anything, and we have these conversations, let's not do too much of it. Take out a comfy chair.
Here it goes.
If you had a blank sheet of paper, how many clubs would be in the Premiership?
If you're going to stick with an English league, ideally 10.
Well, I thought you were going to go 8. Actually, I thought eight would be more concentrated.
Ten would still give you
enough of those weekends you need, wouldn't it? Yeah, but the question of a pan-European league would be fantastic. Can you imagine that if you could get that going? What a wonderful league that would be.
Chris, Mark also just said that we were witnessing the revival of French rugby. Yeah.
And England... have you been to Montpellier lately?
Well, that's the revival of South African rugby, isn't it?
They don't cook French food anymore. They just have a constant braai available.
Exactly.
And Bourrevoss is the breakfast of choice.
So you're not buying into the France are back theory?
No, I think France have recognised far too late that it went too far one way, and they say look around for these young players coming through, and you know Stade Français tried desperately to hold on to that to keep players in because one, it's cheaper, and you know I think it's something that Saracens recognised very soon, wasn't it? You couldn't keep on a revolving door of bringing in lots of players, so you bring kids through the academy, and there's been some fantastic academy talent. I think it's taken much longer for France to recognise this. Now they are. They can see the real benefits.
Well, now they're legislating, aren't they? They're actually forcing the clubs to do it.
They've had to do that because you know the owners have come in and said, I want every sort of All Black who's thinking of coming on holiday to Europe. And you know, and you end up with that brilliant team of Toulon in 2015, you know, when you know, they were a phenomenal side with you know Gitto and Habana and Baki Spotha. These are fantastic world names, Lobé. Yeah, it's great to see them play in Europe, but try and pick a French team from that and you've got problems.
But just with that eye to the future and the pool of death and that conversation for the World Cup, so England and France are in the same group. And for the last 2 years, you'd have thought, well, that's an easy fixture, but we're all shaking.
There hasn't been a single World Cup when you said that, Owen. You couldn't have said that. There was a lazy use of the word.
I know, because we won't do that again.
They're shambolic before every World Cup, and they turn up. I am no more shambolic than 2011, you know, where they didn't even bother with the coaches. They got themselves to you know to the final. It's something about France.
They didn't play a decent game, and
it's been.
It doesn't matter. They can do it at World Cups.
It has been a long, long time since a French-dominated French club side got to a final. In fact, I think you've probably got to go back to the
Toulouse in 96.
Toulouse won 3 very early on, and then they won. I think one in about 2007. I mean, I've got
there was a Kiwi in the 96.
But it's at least 10 years. It's at least 10 years. And there is a correlation. It's not completely exact, but there is a correlation between having a very, very strong club side. Look at Leinster's a good example in Ireland. who can provide the core. Saracens do it for England, who provide, and Scarlets do it for Wales, who provide the core of your national team. Mm. And I think Racing, if they continue with their current recruitment policy, maybe for the first time in a decade, you may have a team in France doing that.
But the England revival under Eddie Jones is your example completely, because it was a Saracen side with others.
Yeah, a dominant side is sometimes very bad for the league, but very good for the national team. You don't need all 14 of your teams being full of French guys, right? But you need some of the good sides. You don't want to be dragging all your players from, with all, you know, oh, that horrible phrase, with all due respect, from the likes of Brive or Agen. Bordeaux, good side.
Yeah,
really,
but they're not the Toulons and they're not the Racings yet. No,
England doesn't take players from Irish, Worcester.
No,
they don't. Newcastle should
whole.
Do more.
On the whole.
Okay, like we need to move on. No, we don't need to move on, but we're going to anyway. We're going
to. You're in charge.
In theory.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yesterday, late afternoon, it was announced that Dylan Hartley was going to miss the England tour.
And the royal birth. Two big announcements.
So this is his umpteenth concussion. I don't think anyone can possibly know how many he's had because...
But don't ask him, he won't remember.
Is this the end of Dylan Hartley for England? Is this the start of an entirely new era? Do we think he's going to spend the summer recuperating and fight his way back in the team? Or do you think that over the course of three tests in South Africa, presumably, I'm guessing Owen Farrell, but happy to be corrected, will take over as captain... And probably Jamie George will step forward and take his opportunity to claim that hooker's berth.
Well, in the era we live in now, the age we live in, Dylan's gone to Instagram and announced, "I'll be back" in true Arnie style. Of course he wants to be back. Of course he's got the massive support of Eddie. He is Eddie's love child. He embodies everything that Eddie wants in his squad. That hard nose in your face. And he handles the other players really well. He does that job off the field really well in exactly the way that Eddie wants it done. On the pitch is a totally different matter. And we are going to be watching very closely who they take, for example. Jamie George, I think, has been classic, has come off a Lions tour and is not the Jamie George that went on a Lions tour.
Jamie could do with
a break, but he's not going to get a break now. He's got to go. He's the experienced hooker. Well, so you take Cowan Dickey and you take Tommy Taylor as well. Do you get those three guys out and see what fast-moving, you know, ball-carrying hookers can do compared to what Dylan does, which is incredibly technical.
Of course, like any player, he'll say, "I'll be back," to which my response is, "Perhaps." And I don't mean that from a selection point of view. I mean that from a medical point of view. He's had an awful lot of head injuries over in a relatively short period. He's had three serious ones, you know, weeks and weeks, months in some cases, in about four seasons. That's a lot. And I mean, my first concern is for the fella. I don't know him, but the fella's health, you know. And I hope if there is a risk, somebody will take him quiet and say, "Look, mate, you've had a great run, but you're only what? Has he turned 30?
Yeah, he's turned 30. He's had 93 caps. He's had an amazing career.
Look, you know, you've got probably 50 years to go, and you know, you do not want to be take any, this is too risky. Let's assume that's not the case. Let's hope it isn't. Is it the interim as England captain? I think Owen Farrell will obviously take over. I don't know whether he was planning to not take him this summer, but I think
he's
going to have to take him now. He's a natural skipper. He's a leader. He runs the team anyway, in tactically. I mean, I'd play him at 10, but that's a different debate. I think that Dylan comes back, he may well play a role a bit like John Smith did for the Springboks. And, you know, when Bismarck Duplessis was clearly the best hooker, but John Smith brought so much more to the party. And the worry for that is, I think, is you can only probably carry one these days in the modern game. We come back to Leinster and Racing for the weekend. You can probably only carry one technical forward, maybe two. Everybody else has got to be able to carry.
You think he might fight his way back into the team?
I don't think so. Beyond the realms of possibility, no.
I think he'd make the World Cup squad.
Yeah, I think.
Well, I've written in the Times today a very wise piece saying that I think he'll go as third choice hooker.
Well, he might. Who's your other two?
There were people applauding actually while they were reading the piece. I must say, Owen, it was very impressive. People were applauding while they were reading.
It was interesting when I got on the London Underground this morning, actually.
Your point about the Japan captain was well made.
It was like the
dark. If only in the last paragraph.
It was like the darkest hour, was it? They all stood up and applauded in the carriage? Or, no?
It was indeed like that. Mark, so as someone who's run a team,
yeah.
If you have a player who is not clearly the best in his position, but he, for whatever reason, the coach feels he should be in the squad for leadership, captaincy, or tactics, or whatever. At what point do the other players feel uncomfortable about that? Because if you have a Jamie George or Luke Cowan-Dickie who plays outstandingly in South Africa, surely the teammates, even if they're not going to come forward and say to Eddie, "We're fed up. This isn't right."
No,
but they will instinctively want those players in the team ahead of Dylan.
In my experience, are often the last group that turn. I mean, you guys turn a lot quicker.
You guys, as in the media?
Yeah. Because you're more objective and you don't see.
And better looking.
Yeah. No. And you don't see some of the dynamics and the real value people bring who've got those roles. I mean, I think the interesting thing now is, because I think if Dylan can play again, he'll be back in the squad. I think Eddie has got this great sort of belief in his strength. I think the interesting thing is whether Luke Cowan-Dickie goes past Jamie George. If you're going
at the moment, he's got a great chance.
On form, he's the best hooker in the country in the Premiership. And I know that international selection is
But you've got to acknowledge that he doesn't hit the darts too well.
You look at the number of lineouts you have in a game.
Yeah, it's not as influential as it used to be.
It's not as influential as it used to be. And the guy is a power athlete, and he carries with venom, and he breaks lines. And I think it'd be really interesting. Jamie George, who is a terrific fella and a very talented player, is not having the best of seasons. He might go to South Africa. He'll get the start because he's earned that. And actually, that destroys a team more than what you said. You know, if you've got a guy who's been number two and a really loyal number two and hasn't put a foot wrong, and suddenly he gets his chance and you don't pick him, that'll do more to destroy team morale than the first example you gave. So I'm sure he'll start. It'll be really interesting to see whether he comes back as the premium hooker, because at the minute, I think Luke Cowan-Dickie's playing better.
There is something else into this about going to South Africa, because of all the positions you're taking to South Africa, and you might be a little bit suspect. Hooker is not the one, because at the moment, my favourite mark since Groucho is playing absolutely brilliant rugby at hooker. And Marx is a phenomenal athlete. He does the things. If you had an England hooker doing what he does, we'd just be going, this is the most fantastic forward you've got. Ball carrying.
So you're talking about Malcolm Marks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Groucho's grandson. Yeah, it's a really fantastic combination. He has the ultimate skill set for an international hooker at the moment. And you could argue, with Coles being terrible, you know, we don't know if Cole is ever going to come back.
Yeah.
He is the one. But a head-to-head between those two is, in terms of international hookers, you then start looking at, well, the England hookers are good, but are they really at that level? And they're not. But, you know, we don't know. Tommy Taylor has had that terrible injury. I just saw him coming back whilst he played really well. He's got that ability to get over the ball. And when you don't have people getting over the ball, like Coles of Leicester, Dan Cole is not doing what he used to do, so therefore he's not really any point having him in the team if he's not going to jackal because he's too scared of giving penalties away, then you need somebody else in that pack, in that front row, who is going in there, targeting the ball, getting over it strong, like Marks does, and winning it. Because, you know, if Dan's not doing that for Leicester and the number of penalties he gave away means he's stepped back from that role, you're losing a player to do that.
I agree with you, but I think, and at risk of sounding a bit like Eddie Jones here, just because Malcolm Marks is brilliant over the ball doesn't mean that England have to pick a hooker that could do this.
No, but it's another player who's competing in an area where England have been absolutely awful.
And no one's saying that in the sense that you can't suddenly, it's not fantasy rugby. It's about the balance. You pick from the players you've got, and that's a difference between club, it's about recruitment. National teams, it's about selection, because you've only got a certain group of people who are qualified to play for your country. This is where I get slightly flummoxed, I suppose, when we talk about how many conversations and pieces have been written, the balance of the back row. That is so outdated. Mm. It's not the balance of the back row anymore.
Although I wrote my last one 5 years ago, so
it's
that's
good.
Then, isn't
it's
it?
The balance of the pack, the whole pack, not just the back three of it. Have you got enough ball carriers? Yeah. Have you got enough tackle sort of competitors? And do you have enough mobility for them to do both those things? And that's, things like, you look at, again, I'll just use England as an example. You've got some people around the squad who are technicians, and they're really good technicians. Dylan's a terrific technician. Dan Cole, gets a lot of criticism. He's a terrific scrummage technician. Mm. George Cruz is the best
line-out
technician in England. Chris Robshaw is an all-round brilliant. Richard Hill doesn't make mistakes. Closest thing to Richard Hill I've seen since The Great Man. Would you ever put those four in the same pack? Where's your carry?
Yeah.
Where's
your four carriers? Where's your four
cleaners? The balance is just wrong. And so we need to try, and no, we don't need to, it's just more accurate, to get an analysis of the whole, well, actually, if you use the bench as well, the whole 13 forwards, rather than, is he a blind side, is he an open side, all that. It just doesn't work like that anymore. Look at the look at the two teams that we've been lauding at the weekend. Now, Nianga played eight. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember him as a tearaway open side for Bezier back in the day.
Then he went to six and did a brilliant job there. Now he's 80. It doesn't matter.
There's a bit of Sam Simmons in that.
And Sam Simmons is a good it's a good example. It's okay. About balance.
But so we're talking on this whole pitch of how the England pack could look. Well, at what stage do we introduce Brad Shields, or do you feel that's not the thing to do?
Honestly, take this one.
Come on, Chris. I made a load of jokes last time about departure lounge at Auckland Airport was being overused. Brad Shields, yes, he signed for Wasp. Fantastic. He's been really good taking over from Haskell. Do we know that he can play the way he plays the Hurricanes at test level?
Well, of course we don't, because he's not exactly done it.
So you're going to take him and throw him into a test series where England are going in zip three down after the Six Nations. They could be zip six at the end of this and decide, I don't know if he's going to start, but
Eddie does want to take him.
You don't fly him in just to say, just take part in a few training sessions, see if you're any good, because they've got a big problem at six.
Have a look at him, but clearly if he's taking him, there's a big chance of him playing him.
Yeah, if you're taking that sort of gamble, he's got to be in there to be in your team.
What's the argument against taking him?
The argument against taking him is, do you say to people like young Willis at Wasps, do you take it to Dave Ewers, do you take these guys who want the opportunity, who deserve an opportunity? I mean, Willis at Wasps has been fantastic. Is he ready? We won't know, but what a great place to take him and find out.
I would hope that he would go as well. I mean, what is the argument against Brad Shields? I mean, I actually don't see the argument against him, apart from I haven't seen enough rugby that he's played to tell me that he can do it.
But I don't think there is an argument other than selection. I mean, international rugby, or any international sport, is not about deserving to be picked. It's about the job of the coach is to pick the best squad of the players who is available. If Brad Shields is available and he qualifies for England, which he does... and I'm assuming he can get released from the Hurricanes because of the whatever, then Eddie is beholden upon the coach to pick him if he thinks, how many are they taking, 36 or something? If he's in the best 36 for whatever reason, he goes. And I don't, look, we're going to have another really interesting conversation about eligibility, and I'm pretty radical in that one. But at the moment, you play by the rules as they are, and he's as eligible to go as Chris Robshaw.
Okay, all right. If you're ready, you're taking Brad Shields. Now you two are allowed one other pick of an uncapped player.
I'll take Nick Schonert at Worcester.
Oh,
really good tight end. Should have gone to Argentina.
He's a good player.
And okay,
he was in the squad for Argentina, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he got injured the day before he left.
Yeah. I know Durban born, South African under 20s, done his time here under the eligibility mark. Yeah, you're right, he qualifies.
Yeah, he does.
But
good player.
I've seen him a number of times this year, and
they're a different side when he plays.
Yeah, when he's a tight end, and he does stuff around the pitch, what you need to do. And he would have the right mental attitude.
You're going to take Sinclair and you're going to take Williams. You take him as your third.
You take three. You leave Dan behind. Okay. And you say, right, come on. Let's see. Williams, if you want to do it. I really like the look of the entire Exeter front row in terms of what they offer you.
Yeah, I do too.
And, you know, Sinclair can ball carry for you. Sean, if things get a bit meaty and you need that tight end who's just going to get in there and not move and just, you know, look at them. And say, come on, have a go. I mean, he's your boy.
He'd enjoy that.
The other name I throw in is Gary Graham. Who is he a dog? Is he a dog of seven? Can he play that dog style at international? Give him a chance. I mean, he turns up and trains for England. He gets put out for about 2 months due to injury. I mean, if the guy is what Eddie thinks is a really doggy seven to really get in there.
His comeback game a week and a half ago was outstanding, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, give him a chance.
Mark?
I don't think there's anyone who's uncapped. You've nailed the one. I'd have to think it through. I can't. So many people get capped in Argentina last summer and various things that I don't think they're an uncapped player. I can't. One doesn't immediately spring to mind, actually, that I would genuinely take.
Well, this
that would get it. I'm not sure.
I know it's early.
No, because I'd take Armand and I'd take Simmons and I'd take. I did this the other night and my back row got filled by people who were already capped. So no, I wouldn't. Although I think he's a super player, and I don't like this. Well, actually, I don't. It helps very much just to throw in a load of untried players. I don't think
he'll throw in a load, but
He loves to have a look at people, doesn't he?
Yeah. I've seen him a couple of times. He's been very good, but there is a bit of man of the moment about him. He hasn't sustained it over.
It was like Jack Clifford from 2-3 years ago when everyone said Jack Clifford, you know, that great under 20 side that won the World Cup. Yeah. And you look at the number of players who've come through from that team, and Jack Clifford was a standout of a team of standouts. And now he's been injured all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem. People coming from a long way back, that used to happen a long time ago. It doesn't happen that much.
Do you two not want to see Dan Robson in the squad?
I just don't think Eddie. Dan's having a really good season, but I don't think he's.
No, I don't think he will. Eddie's done it, doing everything.
You can make the same argument. Ben Spencer has played really well for Sarries. Yeah. He's come on. He's got.
I think he's more likely. Well. I think Eddie rates him more than them.
I think for the game England play, it's nothing. I just think it's just a style thing. I think Spencer's more likely to go than Robson.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a look ahead to the weekend. One massive game at the weekend or Friday evening. Leicester Tigers Newcastle, so the most influential game over for the outcome of the top four semi-finals at the moment.
Yeah,
the table looks at the moment, it's at Welford Road. Mark,
yeah,
fifth against fourth. Mark,
well, I mean, until last week, was it last week? Not this. When Northampton won there, when Rob Horn unfortunately got injured out of the game. I'd have thought Leicester were absolutely nailed on to win that. And I think they probably will. And Newcastle have had a great year.
So Newcastle in fourth at the moment.
Yeah.
I think Leicester
will win at Welford Road. If it was at Kingston Park.
On a Friday night.
I think I might have gone for the Falcons, but I think home advantage. Yeah.
Mark, how impressed have you been with what Dean Richards has done with Newcastle over the years, but particularly this season? So you were the man at Harlequins who appointed Dean Richards.
Yeah,
so you've seen a lot of him.
Yeah.
You've worked very closely with him.
Yeah. You cannot argue with the man's record. His record as a club coach is second to none. He won four titles with Leicester and two Heineken Cups. He came to Harlequins as we got relegated. He was already signed a contract, so he was coming whether we went up or down. He had he would say himself that he had a great year where he could do sort of experiment and talk about looking at players under no real pressure. Came back in, and then within 3 years, we came second in the Premiership and were in a Heineken quarter final. We all know how that ended. He's gone to Newcastle and taken a side that were perennially 10th, 11th, never quite went down, did they? Or did they go down once? I can't remember. No, they went down.
They always hung
got
in there,
very, very close a number of times and has, without spending huge amounts of money, the budget has gone up, but nothing like to the level of some of the competitors, has turned them into a really competitive side, difficult to beat, very physical, know their role, great role clarity amongst the players, which is the number one job of any coach. Do your players know what you're expecting them to do? And is it clear in their heads?
No showboating superstars.
He's good just team. Got a good coaching panel. He recruits good coaches. It's one of his. He's a good recruiter. Mm. He recruits good coaches. I think Dave Waldo, you can see the what he's brought to the table. I know he's enjoying himself up there. His record as a club coach in the Premiership has got to be second to none.
I've seen quite a bit of them, Owen, this year. And I think at this moment, I think there are a couple of players short of a squad enough to sustain it.
Yeah, I agree.
I've seen the last 2 weeks. I've seen them. The last couple of weeks, they've looked tired. That offloading game, which is so good, has had too many errors.
And they had to play last weekend as well.
Yeah, Leicester have had a week off.
Yeah, they had to go to Gloucester.
Chris, if Dean Richards had not got stuck in the whole Bloodgate thing, do you think he would have?
He's got more to answer than just Bloodgate. I mean, he led us into this blind alley where they've been searching for head coaches and directors of rugby. Want to call a role with England? It was his. It was his.
You're saying the England job was his. He would have taken over.
Yeah. He would have been the next one. And I know Mark is very much aware of this, that they really wanted him. And he would have solved a lot of problems that have cropped up since then about people who patently weren't ready for jobs being given them.
So it's all his
Dean
fault.
Would have come in. He would have made some significant changes to the RFU to ensure that he got what he wanted in terms of people he could talk to and control and people, the right coaches. And it would have been great. So it's your fault, Dean.
Yeah, the road not travelled, I suppose, isn't it?
So we agree that England rugby's problem is down to Dean Richards.
Absolutely, and I hope he holds his hands up.
With that exclusive revelation, we will bring this edition of The Ruck to a close. Thank you very much for downloading and listening. We have a pledge to bring the Ruck special on the women's game next week with Stephen Jones. Please tune into that. We'll be back next week. Thank you very much.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.